This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and it is currently the 29th of December 2010, and today I'm talking to Adrian Salbucci, a researcher, essayist, and lecturer on political power structures, economics, and financial globalization based in Argentina. His website is available at asalbucci.com.ar, and his first book in English, The Coming World Government, Tragedy and Hope? Is now available for purchase for $20 via PayPal. And again, information on that can be found at asalbucci.com.ar. Mr. Salbucci, thank you very much for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Good evening, James. My pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, and I'm excited for today's conversation. And I'm really interested to talk with you today about Argentina's rather unique situation in the economic New World Order. But before we get into that, perhaps you can introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your background, how and why you came to start your website, and what type of information you deal with.
Well, basically, I've always been in business and finance, basically in the insurance and reinsurance field as a risk manager. So I've done extensive investigations into risk management and strategic planning. I was brought up in the United States of America, in New York City. I don't know if that's good or that's bad, but that's the way things go. I live in Argentina practically all my adult life. I'm 58. I've got four kids. And, well, when I started seeing the recurrent collapses of my country, you sort of start to scratch your head and try to wonder, well, what's happening here? And I almost spontaneously started to study how the global power structures work, and I found that it is a totally different reality from what the New York Times, the Financial Times, CNN, and Fox News would have you believe, and the local press in Argentina. So I began publishing books in Spanish, practically all. This is the one you just kindly mentioned a few minutes ago is my first book in English. All my other books are in Spanish, especially one, the title of which would translate as The World's Mastermind, The Hidden Face of Globalization, which is already in its fifth edition and has been quite successful down here, throughout Latin America, actually, because there's very little literature in the Spanish language describing this. So, you know, here we are. And now, having done all of that, we're trying to say, okay, what should we do to get out of all these problems? And that's where Second Republic comes in.
Absolutely. And that's something I'd, of course, like to touch on during our conversation today. But as I said, I wanted to talk about Argentina and its recurrent collapses, as you term it, which I think is a good way of talking about it. And I wanted to go over some of the history of Argentina and its sort of position in the belly of the beast of the New World Order globalization system for so long. And in your book, The Coming World Government, Tragedy and Hope, you go back as far as the 1800s to talk about the independence spirit of the Argentinians and some of the fascinating history that uninformed North Americans like myself might not be aware of. So perhaps you can talk a little bit about the history of Argentina and how it came to where it is today.
Well, in a way, maybe I have the advantage of having gone to school in the States and then naturally having also studied here in Argentina, so I can compare some of the aspects, historical aspects of the United States with those of Latin America in general. If anything, well, we used to be a colony of Spain until 1810, and then we became supposedly independent, only to realize many decades later that the cost of becoming politically independent of Spain was that we became an economic colony of England. So in a way, I admire, and I must say this with very honestly, I admire much more the American Revolution, because you chose the right enemy. Well, you know, history took you that way, of identifying Britain as the key country from which to become independent, which you did, and you did very heroically. We did not do that, because after becoming independent of Spain, as I said, in 1810, what used to be the viceroyalty of the River Plate, which was created by Spain in the 18th century and was like a mega country, so to speak, which included present-day Argentina, Paraguay, Bolivia, southern Brazil, Uruguay, and most of Chile and parts of Peru, through British geopolitics, that was split up into a whole group of smaller and clearly much weaker countries. So I always say there's a key year in the history of America, of the Americas, 1776. On the 4th of July, you became, the 13 original colonies became independent of Britain, and you grew to be the 50 states and the superpower that you are today. And on the 3rd of August of 1776, Spain formed the viceroyalty of the River Plate, and instead of growing, we just split up and bickered and had artificial borders set up between us, and we are the six or seven very weak countries in the southern part of the South American continent that you see today.
Well, just for the record, I'm Canadian, so I'm jealous of any country that's able to form a republic. But the point is well taken, and certainly I think many listeners would be able to identify with that. So moving forward into the 20th century, obviously, as I've mentioned a few times now, Argentina has been sort of almost like a test subject for the types of austerity measures that I think most of the Western world is about to see in the wake of this planned financial disaster. Maybe you can tell us about some of the more recent history and how Argentina has survived and thrived, or perhaps not thrived in the wake of these economic collapses.
Yeah, we have not thrived. That's that's a very good point. No, basically, I think there are just two or three salient points to very quickly mention about the 20th century. Repeatedly, for different reasons, which would be too complex to explain, Argentina has always been at loggerheads with the empire of the moment. So, for example, during the First World War, when practically all the countries in South America declared war on the side of the Allies and against the Central Powers, Germany, Austria, Hungary, and Turkey, we were completely neutral. So that there we started having a point against us, so to speak, from the powers that be. When the League of Nations was formed, since we did the president of Argentina at that time thought that it was not a fair stance, we did not become a member. Then during the Second World War, not only did we not declare war against Germany, Italy, and Japan, but if anything, we had a neutrality which was more favorable to the Axis powers than it was to the Allies. So again, we became a country that was not trusted by the powers that be. And we did that not because we were pro-communist at all. If anything, the government of Juan Perón, which was in power from 1946 to 1955 and really started creating a very strong Argentina, wanted to have nothing to do either with the Soviet Union or with Britain and the United States. We wanted to take a completely independent stance. He was finally bombed out of power by local military in Argentina that were aligned, at least, I'm not going to say ally, but aligned to the global power elite at the time after the Second World War. And from then onwards, Argentina has just gone down and down and down. We used to have the strongest middle class in South America and Latin America, and now we are really down in the dumps. And basically, and this is one of the points I raise in my book, I think that we became sort of a testing ground on a small scale of things that are starting to happen now on a global scale. As I said at the beginning of the interview, I'm 58 years old, and in my adult life, I have lived through three economic collapses. In 1975, then in 1989, we had hyperinflation, which was practically one of the only four or five cases of hyperinflation in the history of the world. And then in 2001, 2002, we had a full financial and banking meltdown. So, you know, these things, we've actually suffered them in our own flesh and blood. And from what I see later happening, I think that they were like testing grounds for things that are now starting to happen on a global basis. So when I saw what happened in September 2008 in America and in Europe, in a way I say, hey, this sounds very familiar. And when you start to understand how a mechanism works, you start to see that there's a model behind it and that things are not haphazard. Things don't just happen because somebody makes a big mistake or something. In a way, they represent the model. And when you understand the model of something, you can start predicting how, or forecasting at least, how it will act out as time goes by.
Well, I think that's quite right, and I think that's a message that will resonate with my listeners especially. So certainly, I'd be interested to hear more about the political situation in Argentina, because I think everyone is at least passingly familiar with Perón, but perhaps not so familiar with recent years and the judicialists and the Kirchners and all of that. So maybe you could fill us in a little bit on the political context.
Well, I'll make a very, 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 very brief summary. After Perón was ousted violently in 1955, I think the military of Argentina are practically the only case where the armed forces of a country bombs its own city. I mean, there's practically no other case in history of that. They were so totally treacherous and aligned with the global power elite. But anyway, from then onwards, we had some so-called democratic governments, and then we had military coups, and then another democratic government, and then another military coup. And the last coup that we had was when Perón came back for less than a year. He was very old in the 70s. And there was finally a military-civilian coup in 1976. And that's when the financial system really took over this country, because it disassembled, it destroyed, it deconstructed our industrial-based economy, and it started imposing an artificially generated public foreign debt. That was in 1976. Then you might remember that General Galtieri decided to invade the Falkland Islands, the Malvinas Falkland Islands, in 1982 against Britain. Well, that was probably such a ridiculous mistake that they really had to go like a wet dog with its tail between its legs. And in 1983, we had, and we've had it ever since, so-called democracy, because although they call it democracy, it's not really democracy. And from then onwards, we've just had one bad president after another, after another, after another, until you get to the Kirchners, which are probably the worst we've had so far, but I'm sure they can think of something even worse for the future. And basically, I say, you figure, well, what's wrong with you Argentinians? Are you all dumb? And I say, no. The problem is that what goes as democracy here is basically a system which is the favored system by the power, the money power. In other words, they identify local people who are willing, for various reasons, whether it be ignorance, treachery, fame, or ambition, to do the work of the global power elite with the plans they have for Argentina, especially its territory, to do it for them. And when they identify these people, they will finance their political campaigns, political party, media support, and so forth. So we end up having literally the best democracy that money can buy, which I know is pretty much the case also in just about every other country in the Western world today, but it is particularly so in Argentina. And the country has been weakened continually. We practically have no armed forces now. Our economy is very distorted by our foreign debt. And one of the conditions to be president of Argentina, the unwritten conditions, is that no president, no Congress here should ever investigate Argentina's foreign debt, because if they did, they would be able to see that it all goes back to the illegal military government that took over in 1976, and we could declare it odious debt and not only ask for the bankers to give the money back to us that we've paid, but even ask for an indemnity, because it was basically an illegal debt that should not have been generated in the first place. So that is basically how we get to today. And one last comment, I think, which is worth saying. They hold so much sway over the media that they have literally decultured entire generations. People are very unaware of what things are really all about. It's not the people's fault. It's the media who will just not report any alternative solutions, any alternative views. And you know, it's one of the many cases where you see psychological warfare at work, and with a substantial amount of success.
Unfortunately, very true. And of course, it's called the New World Order because, of course, it is a global system that's being slotted into place, with Argentina seemingly in the lead in many areas. And certainly, if Argentina is able to declare the debt odious and therefore not to be paid back, they would again be a leading example of how people can proceed throughout the current economic collapse. But let's move into the recent times, and talking about the economic collapse of 2000-2001, I think very interesting, because if I'm correct, and I don't know in great detail, but I believe it had to do with the coupling of your currency to the U.S. dollar, and then the lack of the ability to devalue that in relation to that. Tell us a little bit more in detail about what happened there and how Argentina responded in the following years.
Well, the first so-called democratic government we had in 1983 was by in charge of a president by the name of Raúl Alfonsín, and he ended his tenure, his six-year tenure, with full-fledged hyperinflation in 1989, 10,000% inflation in 1 year. It was so bad that he had to leave 6 months earlier, and a new president came in, Carlos Menem, with his finance minister, Domingo Cavallo. What Cavallo and Menem did is they agreed with the international bankers, they agreed with Britain especially, and they introduced a currency board whereby every peso had to be backed by a dollar in the central bank. It was a full-fledged currency board like you find in Hong Kong. And it worked well because people were so completely traumatized by hyperinflation from 1989 and 1990 that they said, hey, this works. There's no more inflation. And I must admit, they really brought inflation down to practically a full stop. But it got to a point where, although it was one peso, $1, inflation did continue for a while, so our internal prices in dollar terms were too expensive. So Argentina could not export, but could only import. So how did they finance those huge imports of mostly even luxury items? With debt. And the debt kept growing and it kept growing and it kept growing. And the bankers were only too pleased and too happy to give all the loans that Mr. Menem and Mr. Cavallo wanted. Even worse, although our foreign debt at the time was in the hands of, could be identified with about 25 bankers, Nicholas Brady, who was George Bush Sr.'s Secretary of the Treasury, introduced the Brady Bonds. And the Brady Bonds basically said, we're going to change all that debt with 25 banks into millions and millions of sovereign debt bonds, which were only worth about 14 cents to the dollar. But our government was so treacherous that they said, okay, we can privatize all our state companies, and you can pay us with those debt bonds at their nominal value. So they, mainly the bankers and international companies, ended up owning our oil, our gas, our minerals, our electricity, our gas, our water supplies, our airline, by just paying 14 cents on the dollar, which is really very good business for them. So that process really deconstructed the entire country in a very severe way. After 10 years of the currency board, $1, 1 peso, the whole thing was about to blow up completely. A new president had come in, Fernando de la Rúa, who again brought Mr. Cavallo back. That was a horrendous mistake. And they couldn't cope with it. The IMF pressed us in a huge manner. And finally, the whole thing just blew to pieces, since they did not say, okay, let's make it $1.50, a peso 50 to a dollar. Let's make it 2 pesos to a dollar. No, they just kept stuck to their guns, and they said, okay, 1 peso, $1, and the whole thing blew up. And when it blew up, that's when, in order to avoid a major banking collapse, the government decreed that nobody could take their money out of the bank. You could only take out $250 a week. And you might remember that was in 2001 and 2002. People went out on the streets with their banging their pots in their pans and so forth. And the result of this was that half of our population fell below the poverty line because companies folded, people lost their jobs and so forth. And yet, not one single bank collapsed. And one of the last things that Mr. Cavallo did, he negotiated with Credit Suisse, First Boston, with David Mulford and a host of other bankers. He negotiated a new mega debt swap, bond swap, which increased Argentina's public debt by $52 billion, and yet the whole thing collapsed 4 months later anyway. So we just the debt was added on to us. We have a massive debt, which is really crushing the country. And from then onwards, none of the financial and social problems were resolved. And the Kirchners, who are the ones who took over, Nestor Kirchner for 4.5 years since 2003, and now his wife, they have done nothing but support the bankers. We paid $10 billion to the IMF in 2006, and now Cristina Kirchner is getting herself ready to pay $7 billion to the Paris Club of Bankers. So if anything, all our presidents are always functional to the bankers, and they use local psychological warfare and other basically political lies to keep the people, especially the lower classes, quote-unquote happy, and they continue governing the country on that basis.
Well, that's particularly interesting because I think Kirchner has been portrayed in the press as someone who has stood up to some extent to the banksters, but obviously that is not the case. What is to account for the discrepancy between the image that has been projected of him and what he's actually been doing, or what he did do before he died, I should say?
I think it's easy. Basically, one of the things that the global power elite are introducing are what is called social democracy, or a variation of social democracy, as what one can describe as the ideology for the New World Order. And I'll tell you why. The very first thing that Nestor Kirchner did when he was elected president, he accepted an invitation to travel to London to the International Social Democratic Summit that had been called by Anthony Giddens from the London School of Economics, and the host was Tony Blair at the time. So off he rushed to London. He obviously is very much aligned to social democracy. And social democracy, to understand it, present-day social democracy, of which the Kirchners are a prime example, has three sides. First of all, on the cultural and social side, they are very, very left-wing. They are anti-military, anti-church, pro-gay, pro-human rights, their variation of human rights, pro-abortion, etc., etc. So, you know, they have the mothers from Plaza de Mayo who are always around them, and they are always complaining about and crying over the desaparecidos, the so-called disappeared from the 1970s and so forth. So culturally and socially, they are very left-wing. Politically, they are very center. They wouldn't dare question the present-day political power structures. They completely align themselves. And then economically, they are liberal right-wingers because they will always pay the bankers, their economy minister. For example, Nestor Kirchner accepted to have an economy minister imposed upon him, a gentleman by the name of Roberto Lavagna, and Roberto Lavagna comes straight out of the banking circles, straight out of the banking system. And he is the one, because Argentina had gone into default at the beginning of 2002, Roberto Lavagna fixed that all up. He set up a new series of a new mega sovereign debt bond swap, which worked very well for the bankers, very much against the country. And once he had implemented that, he left. And Nestor Kirchner is the guy who gave $10 billion to the IMF when the IMF had not even asked for that money. He just said, I'm going to get rid of the IMF. We owe them $10 billion. Here they go. He paid them $10 billion. And yet today, once again, we are under the tutelage of the IMF. So you figure that's what social democracy is all about. One discourse for the people, especially the lower classes, which is very left-wing. One discourse for the power structures. Hey, we are very center. We're not going to ever do anything that's revolutionary. And then music to the ears of the bankers. We are right-wingers, very discreet, and we will always pay you, and we will always renegotiate and roll over all debt, which is what bankers basically want.
Absolutely. Well, very interesting, and it seems more just more of the left-right political duopoly charade that we see in every modern Western democracy. And unfortunately, the way that most governments are run these days, the best democracy money can buy, as you say. Well, I understand that you have your misgivings or doubts about his recent death.
Well, yes, because there's even many people here, but one must be very cautious about this. One must be very cautious about this, who have their serious doubts as to whether he actually died. And I'll tell you why. And I think that, you know, we have to be very, very careful when saying this. So I'm just saying this as an idea in the back of my mind, so to speak. Because, first of all, he was only 60. He was supposedly ill, but, you know, he just had the stress of anybody who's been president and so forth. And their government has, from the very day one, it's always based itself upon lies. Let me give you one very short example. I am the guy, together with a lawyer and another associate, who sued former President Kirchner, because in 1993, he received $650 million when he was the governor of the southern province of Santa Cruz. $650 million from former President Menem and his economy minister, Cavallo, so that he would sign, because he was one of Santa Cruz, his province, was one of the oil-producing provinces, so that he would sign an agreement to privatize the state oil company YPF, which was a massive privatization, the biggest privatization in our history. He signed the agreement, but he asked for $650 million from an old lawsuit, which, okay, he received it. He received that in April 1993. He expatriated the funds, and they never came back. Until today, they never come back. That was 18 years ago. So we sued him because he said in a summit that he had placed that money at 1% interest with the Federal Reserve Bank. And I wrote to the Federal Reserve Bank, and the Federal Reserve Bank, he said, no way, we don't receive investments from anybody. We're the Central Bank of the United States. So we publicly sued him, and of course, justice here is so lopsided that he ended up being acquitted by a judge who happens to be his son-in-law. Just a small matter. So this is just one prime example that I know very, very well from firsthand, where they have systematically lied their way through. So the fact that Mr. Kirchner died on the 27th of October, when he was he was up against the corner because of many lawsuits that he has for having increased his personal wealth tenfold in just a couple of years and so forth, that I think that one can construe that it might be part of a tactic to ensure that his wife gets elected in October 2011's presidential elections. That's next year. Now, our presidential elections are going to be on the 30th of October of 2011. And 3 days before that, on 27th October 2011, we will all be remembering the first anniversary of the death of this great patriot, Nestor Kirchner, who disappeared, etc., etc., etc. And that's going to be all over the television set. And that's going to be the best way to close a presidential campaign. When you add to that that his funeral was with a closed coffin, that nobody know, that no autopsy was done, that we don't know who signed his certificate of death. And one last point, one foreign dignitary did go to his funeral in the southern province of Rio Gallegos, to his burial, I should say. President Hugo Chavez, he went with his presidential airplane to Rio Gallegos, down south in Argentina, and who knows who might have come back on board that airplane back to Caracas. So, okay, this is something that one can infer, but it is something that is starting to, many people here are starting to scratch their heads and say, hey, that was a very funny death, that was a very funny set of coincidences. So, you know, we just sort of keeping it there on the wayside. It's like September 11, when you first saw it, everybody said, hey, no, these are the dreadful Arabs doing this against us. But then as you looked at it and you thought about it over and over again, you figure, hey, wait a second, that is too much of a massive collapse of the World Trade Center for 19 people, suicide guys, led by a nut with a turban hiding in the caves of Afghanistan to be able to pull that. Something else must be going on here. And I think with the death of Kirchner, a lot of people are starting to feel something similar to that.
Very interesting. Well, speculation, but interesting speculation nonetheless.
It is speculation. Yeah, I want to be very honest. It is, for the time being, it is mere speculation.
All right. Well, then moving forward, I guess the question is, how does a country like Argentina survive and hopefully shake off this odious debt, which has been unfortunately foisted on the people? And I think you have an extremely interesting plan called the Second Republic Project. I'd love to hear more about that and how that idea developed.
Well, basically, when you look at things that have happened to us, and you look, for example, at the model behind the collapse in 2002, which is surprisingly similar to the model of 2008 in America and elsewhere, whereby you had a whole system collapsing and so forth, that you start to understand how it works, how the fractional banking system works, how psychological warfare works. We could say a whole lot of things about that. We basically figure it's just a threefold way of thinking based on common sense. If you understand how the global power structures work, and you understand why they want us all to think and act in one way, and not to think and act in another way. For example, they don't want us to define money in any way different than what the Federal Reserve Bank or the Central Bank of Argentina or the Central European Bank does. When you understand why they want us to do certain things, well, then common sense tells you to do exactly the opposite. And exactly the opposite is how Second Republic arises we actually started building the whole thing in 2002 and 2003, which is there are five key pillars which imply doing exactly the opposite of what the global power elite wants us to do. Pillar number one, they don't want any of us to have a strong sovereign nation state, because the purpose of a strong sovereign nation state is twofold: to promote the common good within the country and to defend the national interest against all sorts of threats and problems that may come from abroad or even from inside. So pillar number one, let us all restore the sovereign nation state. Pillar number two, they don't want us having sovereign currency which is not interest-based. They want us to do everything with private money from the bankers, which is based on fractional lending and which carries enormous interest with it. That's why they limit the amount of public money, which is non-interest-bearing, the dollar bills and the pesos we might have in our pockets. They've done that traditionally. And they want us to define money the way they want it. So second pillar, let us restore sovereign currency in each country, or at least in every region. The third pillar, they talked us into thinking that everything you want to do, whether it is as an individual, as an organization or corporation, or even as a country, you have to do indebting yourself with debt, massive amounts of debt. So now we have a planet where individuals, corporations, organizations, and entire nations are indebted. And the key question is, indebted to whom? So the third pillar is, let us reject the debt-based system. Let us do what every honest housewife will do. If $1,000 comes in, I shouldn't be spending more than $1,000 in my expenses. And if I do it 1 month, it's because I've already had a reserve from the previous month. But you can't just say, oh, my, you know, we have $1,000 income, and I just keep lovelily spending $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a month, because you're going to collapse, or the bankers are going to end up owning you. So third pillar, reject the debt-based system. Fourth pillar, let us release our republican institutions. Neither the Constitution of America or the Constitution of Argentina has the word democracy once in its wording. Let us recover our release our republican institutions from their dependency, even slavery, upon money. Let's go back to a system where any citizen can become a government officer or whatever without needing to have hundreds of millions of dollars from bankers and corporations and wealthy people to finance his campaign, to finance his political party, and so forth. And the fifth pillar, last but not least, is they have inverted and taken away all our values. They've really put our nations, from the point of view of values and morals and ethics, exactly heads downwards. Let's put things back right up again. Let's put our values where they belong, our feet firmly on the ground, our minds and heads looking towards the heavens, and let's put our values back in place. And that I describe as something very similar. Finance, the world of finance, which is the, because I don't want to get out of, you know, delve away from the political, the world of finance should always be subordinated to the real economy. The real economy should always be serving a political plan which is executed with the idea of preserving the common good and defending the national interest. The political should always respect local culture. And local culture, I personally believe, should always have an inkling or an intuition for the transcendental. Call it God, call it whatever you want to call it. What's wrong with the present-day world order? It's what I just said exactly the other way around. Finance destroys the economy. The economy pays kickbacks to all politicians. Politicians destroy culture. And culture is so totally destroyed that it has no need, no intuition for the transcendental. So it's just those five pillars that I think that any country, certainly Argentina, if you implement them correctly, and you enlighten the population and public opinion, should be able to get out of this malaise in a very short time.
Well, I certainly think that few people would have any disputes with those pillars, but I guess it's always the question of defining them. So to get to the issue of debt, no debt based economy, how do you go about implementing that? Would you have a silver and gold backed currency, or would you have a fiat non-debt based money that's democratically controlled?
I would tend to go for the second. I think that the key with currency is basically that you always control the amount of currency that is in circulation and the velocity. You have to take into account many aspects, not only the amount of currency that's put into circulation, but also its velocity. We tend to avoid, maybe we need something that a friend of mine has called it, dubbed it mini economics, because we have microeconomics looking at what you do in your own home or what you do with your own company, etc., and then macroeconomics, the huge economic factors and parameters of the and metrics of the United States or Europe or Argentina. And we need something in between, which we often dub here as mini economics, which is saying, well, how does the economics of a certain sector works? Because you have very fast circulating money, for example, in retailing, which are small amounts going very quickly through Walmart and so forth. And then you have very slow circulating money for large amounts in your real estate or in the car industry, in the construction in the car industry. So you have to bring all of those together. And today we have the technology to really control the amount, the quantity of money. There lies the secret, the quantity of money. Bill Still has issued a very good video called The Secret of Oz, describing how the quantity of money is really the key factor. However, you might say, well, what about gold-backed? Probably we might need, and I really believe this, we need a transitional period with gold-backed currency, because people have become so suspicious of U.S. dollars, Argentine pesos, Brazilian reals, and just about every currency in the world, that in order to bring back trust, we probably will need a transitional period where we will say there is a new currency, whether it be in America or in Argentina or whatever, and if you don't really like it, you can redeem it in gold. But as time goes on, when people see that currency currency that the authorities are properly managing the monetary system, the need for gold will probably disappear. And it should, because the function of money is to promote economic growth based on the common good and not on speculation. And you cannot have the quantity of money being limited by anything other than the amount of work and the amount of labor and the amount of economic growth. If you gear it and you tie it into gold, you're limiting it by the amount of gold available. If anything, and this is the last idea I would just like to mention, if we were to define money, the dollar bills or the pesos in your wallet or pounds, sterlings or euros, as a certificate for work, you've just solved half of all monetary problems, because if the only way that you or I or our listeners can get hold of money is by giving a counterpart of work, whether it be physical work, intellectual work, great work, menial work, but any type of work, it would mean that nobody can get hold of money unless he gives something which is socially productive. Three exceptions: children, because they're too little. Older people, because they've already finished their work cycle and they have every right to be pensioned, and the disabled, people who have disabilities, naturally, either their families have to look after them, or the state has to look after them, or the authorities have to look after them. But everybody else who can work, you, me, etc., we have to work if we want to have money. However, the present system allows anybody, as a matter of fact, the more criminal he is, the more money he can get, either because he is in illegal commerce, whether it be drug trafficking or arms dealers or whatever, or because he has a lot of money and he just puts it in the bank and lives from interest. So the very fact that you have, I agree with you, if you find a drug deal, you just put him in jail. But somebody who has $10 million, all he has to do is put it in the bank, and he doesn't have to work ever again in his life. He just lives off interest, which means he is living off as a parasite from the economy, which means that you and me and everybody else is paying for him to live as a parasite. So when you have that so embedded that it is legally possible, there you have a major problem, and it is a major global problem. If we were to just do that, define money as a certificate for work, present work, past work, or future work, you will be solving a whole mass of the problems of mankind, which obviously goes against the banking interests.
Absolutely. Well, it's an interesting idea, but my suspicious nature, my imagination is that after 10 minutes or so of such work certificates, you'd have people trading the certificates as if they were money. And then after 20 minutes, there'd probably be banks that would be printing them out and loaning them. And then after 30 minutes, you'd probably have mortgage-backed securities and we'd be straight back into the mess. So I don't know if inevitable.
Mind you, James, I agree with you, but I think that the first thing you have to do is at least start pointing in the right direction. I agree with you. Human nature being what it is, ambition being what it is, even people's willingness to really, you know, become rich and improve their own personal lot being what it is, that will probably happen. But as you, and I've said it in a very simplified way, as you control the system, you improve it, you enlighten people as to the need for that, you would at least be pointing in the right direction. Maybe to reach, you would never reach perfection, but to reach something which is reasonably good, it would take you a while. But at least you're going in the right direction. Otherwise, now what you have is that anybody, as that's why you have 983 billionaires who have more money than the lower 2.5 billion people on the planet. As long as you say, well, that's legally okay, you're never going to solve the problem. At least let's take, even if it's a timid first step in the right direction to trying to solve these problems, and not doing it in a simplistic way as I described, but in a much more sophisticated, rational, and pragmatic way. I'll buy that. You know, we're just describing this in a few minutes.
Absolutely. Well, I'm not trying to dismiss the ideas. I certainly do agree that it is incumbent on us to try to come up with the best ideas we can and to improve upon them, because they'll never be perfect. So I agree with that sentiment. But I understand that you've been working on this Second Republic project for a while now. How has it been received so far?
Well, it's been received very well down here. Basically, our main problem is that we don't have the resources, not to do anything political. I mean, we're not a political party or anything. We just want to enlighten Argentine public opinion, especially since just about everybody is complaining that there are no political options. You know, the rallying call in 2002, when people went out into the streets with their pots and pans, they were so fed up with the politicians that everybody scrammed, Get rid of all of them. Que se vayan todos, which means get rid of all of them. We don't want to see any of them back. today we are now preparing ourselves for next year's elections, and they're all back. It's the same people, exactly the same people who were meddling around in politics 8 years ago. They're still now back saying, I'm the ideal candidate for president or for governor or for senator or for representative. So, you know, the system, the money-based system is so powerful that its own feedback, it will always come back and bounce back the way that they want to do it. So what we're trying to do now is to promote these ideas, and I have a pretty good plan to visit different cities and to have a radio program next year, which is why this is the first book that I'm selling where I'm asking for those $20, basically to fund this project. However, the key point, which I think is worth saying here, is that I was invited to give a conference in Fort Lauderdale in March of this year, and I had the honor of sharing the podium with G. Edward Griffin from the United States. And when asked, because, you know, I explained what had happened in Argentina, and somebody asked, well, what did you do? And I said, well, what we did is we basically came up with this idea of the Second Republic. And I said the five pillars, as I just mentioned. And the idea caught on so well that with Ed Griffin and a couple of other colleagues, we are working on what we call a Second Republic project. As a matter of fact, anybody who wants to look at that, our website is secondrepublicprojectaltogether.com. And there you will find six videos explaining the basic pillars, the basic idea behind Second Republic, and why it can be used as a template for an internet nation, which would be a way of people agreeing this on a global basis and then adapting it to your local country and to your local possibilities and to your local needs. And just to make it perfectly clear, the first button that you will see when you go into secondrepublicproject.com is a button that says personal sovereignty, because we feel that there's no use talking about highfalutin ideas like sovereignty and national freedom, etc., if you don't have your own personal sovereignty. And that personal sovereignty, we believe, is based on what we call nine noble virtues: honor, truth, loyalty, discipline, perseverance, work, freedom, bravery, and solidarity. If you don't have that well in your own personal set of values, there's no point in trying to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to save everybody else, when you're not even saving yourself. So, you know, we believe that when you have your own personal sovereignty well in hand and well positioned, then, yeah, we can all start working together to not only bring freedom and bring improvement to our respective countries, but to do it generously, exchanging ideas and exchanging efforts between countries and between continents.
So, in effect, you're hoping to complete the independence of 1810.
Hopefully, yes. That would be too ambitious and objective, especially for a 58-year-old guy. But at least I'm willing to say I'm going to add my grain of sand so that, you know, we can. I mean, I suppose that conquering and retaining the independence of any country is permanent work. You don't just say, oh, I'm free already and everything's okay. Look at America. You became a vast superpower. You became a vastly sovereign nation, and yet without realizing it, you were taken over by a global power elite who have used you and misused you in a horrendous way. And a lot of people who dislike Americans, for example, the old Yankee go home thing, is not because of the American people, or, well, I know you're Canadian, but, you know, you're it will be part of that of a similar alliance. It's because of what the global power elite do to the rest of the world from their places of power in New York and in Washington and in London and maybe even in Canada.
Absolutely. Well, that's very much agreed. So just in wrapping up, then, tell people again about your website and where they can go for more information.
Sure. My website is asalbucci, that's asalbucci.com.ar. And the Second Republic Project is, you just write all together, secondrepublicproject.com. And anybody who would like to have more information can also send me personally an email to arsalbucci, that's arsalbucci, @gmail.com. And I will answer, I'm trying to answer just about everything I get.
Excellent. Well, it's been a pleasure to talk with you today, and I certainly hope that we'll be able to have you back on in the future to talk more about this this fascinating subject, and good luck on all the work that you're doing.
Thank you, James, whenever you say, and a very happy new year to you, your family, and all your listeners.
You too.